Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, welcome to Kitchen Politics 123. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico.
Hi, good evening everyone. This is Lori Picka from Michigan. I hope everyone is having a wonderful evening and we're ready to start again.
Yes, and we're on every Sundays and Mondays, 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Tonight's topic, Season 5, Episode 34, In Brightest Day and Blackest Night, and America's Best Days Are Ahead of Us, Not Behind Us. A look into the successes of the Biden-Harris administration and shortfalls going into the 2024 presidential elections. Thanks for joining us and sharing across all social media. The number to call in is 515-605-9802. Say your first name and where you're calling from. No speaking over the host, Laura and I, nor any other caller that may call in and on the air, just like you. So it's about, you know, giving mutual respect and not talking over anybody. Turn off all background noises while on the air as it causes a terrible feedback. And be sure to visit our website. It's www.kitchenpolitics123.com. We'll have interesting articles that you may like and you could share. And we'll also have the merchandise section, which we will be get going soon. So we're not anti-social, just anti-stupid. Let's get cooking, Lori. Okay, so despite infighting, it has been a surprisingly productive 2 years for the Democrats. And the Republicans still can't get back together because one faction fighting with the other faction. And it's just like a big, you know, free-for-all in a Republican Party where a lot of people running for president are apologists for Donald Trump. And basically it looks like an audition to be vice president. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, none of them is even capable of being vice president because they're such lackeys towards Donald Trump. The only one that's not lacking to Donald Trump is the former New Jersey governor, Chris Christie. And despite infighting and Democrats, they're about to hand over to the House Republicans a dynamic for President Biden and his party. It's a turning point, really. Looking back at the last 2 years, there's plenty of infighting on Democrats, even as they held control of both chambers of Congress. So Biden was not able to pass the full scope of the social spending plan. For example, mm-hmm. the expanded child tax credit, that didn't get extended. And the president's student loan relief program is tied up in the courts with an uncertain future. And yet, Democrats still managed to pass major pieces of legislation, several with bipartisan support. So that's a good thing for the Democrats. Republicans, as I said, can't get their act together. And according to NPR political correspondent Mara Lysion, she said recently on an episode of NPR political podcast, and I quote, "The problem is that they oversold and under-delivered, even though what they delivered by any normal metric would have been pretty impressive." So Democrats' accomplishments don't seem to be registering with the public, at least not yet. So as Eric last night pointed out that, you know, even though for the past 2-3 years, going on 4 years, Democrats have passed major legislation, it's hard getting the message out. One, because we're bad messengers. Two, Donald Trump and the well-oiled machine of Fox News, which lies, and a right-wing media put out garbage out there to distract the public. And the people like CNN, ABC, NBC, whoever, who should know better by now and should learn from 2016 not to give so much airtime to Donald Trump, keep doing the same thing that it did in 2016. So if Trump wins, God help us, I hope he doesn't win. It's going to be like a free fall, basically, for American democracy. Maybe over, and Trump, you know, the way he's so maniacal and narcissistic, will go after his enemies and put them in prison. You know, so basically, that's where we're at in America. So Democrats' accomplishments don't register with the public yet, but most Americans disapprove of the job Biden is doing. Why? Because what I just said. But voters did give Democrats strong midterm results, driven in part by the Supreme Court's blowout on abortion rights, Roe versus Wade, and an aversion to more extreme candidates on the right. Republicans for the past 20 years has been running very extremist candidates. And you'd think by now that they'd learn, but, you know, they haven't, you know, lessened their tone. In fact, it's become getting even harsher, and they keep losing elections and never learn. So hopefully that carries over in 2024, and Democrats can get a message across. So what's your take on it, Lori?
The Biden administration has definitely delivered for the American people. But as you said, and as we talked about last night, the media, the mainstream media, that's how I'm going to put it right now, because I'm kind of irritated with the mainstream media, because I feel as if you're right. Trump controls the media, and the reason he controls the narrative and the media is because it makes the networks lots of money. And I'm not saying that they're like his agenda, you know, Trump's agenda. I'm not saying that they're saying that what he does is okay. It's not, and they know that it's not. But it gets clicks on social media. It gets clicks on their websites. And the truth is just not coming out. With the Biden administration, not only President Biden, but the whole administration has done so much for this country that the messaging is not strong. There should be someone out there, and I said this a few weeks ago, a couple times a week, why can't they have, like when COVID, remember when COVID was raging, you know, took over the country, and the country was shut down. They had press conferences a couple times a week, and they were, you know, telling us, you know, what was going on and what to do about it and all of that. Well, why can't they do something like that as far as what the Biden administration is doing, how they're doing it, what's good, what's bad. I mean, not everything is perfect, of course, but there has to be better messaging. They need to put a system together so that people realize what this administration has done and get away from Trump for a while. Pretend like he doesn't exist. Let the legal system take care of him. You know, it's like put a muzzle on him for a while, pretend like he doesn't exist, and maybe we can go forward a little bit, and maybe, you know, Biden's ratings will go up. But also, I did hear that when they do these ratings and they call around, they only call 1,800 people. That's it across the country. 1,800 people, that's nothing. How can you do a poll with 1,800 people? You can't. So I guess what I want to do as our mission, and we don't have to harp on things, but let's just talk a little bit about what he's done and what he's trying to do, you know, and try to get that message out. And maybe someone will hear it and say, yeah, I feel, you know, things are, I didn't know he did that. I didn't know that's why, you know, this is happening. You know, I just did not know. Oh, inflation is down a little bit. Oh yeah, it is. Some things are a dollar cheaper now, you know, and that's what we need to do. So I guess the first thing, the first thing that they did, do you remember, everyone has to remember the American Rescue Plan, and that is when COVID was so bad, and it was a pandemic, and they passed the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan, and that's when everyone got their $1,400 checks, remember that, and then, you know, the state, they were giving unemployment benefits out, so everyone was, you know, basically okay at that time. You know, because they got their money. But everyone forgot about that, right? Everyone forgot. They also extended a $300 a week federal unemployment benefit for some 9.7 million people that were out of work at the time, temporarily expanded the child tax credit program, which you just mentioned, and allotted $7.25 billion for small business loans, and $128 billion in grants for state educational agencies. Now, all of this, if they didn't put this together and no one was working and no one was having any money come in, you know, if your unemployment benefits are depleted, then what do? Then you lose everything. So they basically saved the economy and saved people from going starving in bankruptcy, right?
Exactly.
And it's simple to understand. Am I right or wrong? I mean, it's not hard. Exactly. And you can go ahead, David. You can talk about the
thing. Yes, man. So Biden teamed up with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to administer and track COVID-19 vaccinations across the country because, as you know, the previous administration was lacking in every department when it came on to COVID. And they didn't care, basically. They told people, the public, to take horse medication to fight COVID. Mm-hmm. They did everything that was in wrong information, saying that, if you inject bleach inside you, then, you know, it'll clear up COVID. Oh, it's warm weather, it's summer, so eventually, you know, the warm weather would burn out COVID. All sorts of nonsense made up by Trump, made up by his people who are unqualified. And thank God for Fauci, because Fauci really, you know, went up after Trump at these press conferences and contradicted what Trump said, because he knows better. As in Fauci, Trump is just an idiot. He was just a figurehead, which with no sense. He still doesn't have any sense, you know. And while on March 11th, Bill passed the Senate 50-49 and the House 220-211 along party lines before being signed into law by the president on March 11th, the COVID relief package, the American Rescue Plan. And, you know, other things that the president has done is a bipartisan infrastructure law, which included $284 billion for transportation needs, which included repairing bridges and roadways, public transit and airports, electric vehicles and low-emission public transportation, a further $65 billion for broadband internet in rural areas, as well as $73 billion for power infrastructure, and $55 billion for clean drinking water. So no, places like Texas, who had a grid problem, they got the money and, you know, they sent it back. Why? Because, hey, it's a Democrat. And they tell their constituents, their districts, and their low-level thinking people that, hey, you know, if we take this federal money, it's adding to the deficit, which is total nonsense, you know. And so, you know, the people, as we saw a couple years back, even to this day during the summer, that Texas has been having grid problems and to suffer for it because of Republican partisanship and stupidity. So the legislation was a major bipartisan achievement made possible by 32 Republicans, 13 in the House and 19 in the Senate, who crossed the aisle to ensure that it passed. And former President Trump had pressed conservatives to vote against the bill, but key GOP leaders like Lindsey Graham of South Carolina and Minority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky supported the legislation that really burned up Trump. So the first major gun safety bill in decades, you know, for the past 30 years, absolutely nothing was done in terms of getting major legislation through for gun control and in the wake of mass shootings in Uvalde, Texas, and in Buffalo, New York, at that supermarket, which together claimed the lives of 19 children and 12 adults. Biden signed into the law the largest gun safety bill to pass Congress in nearly 30 years. While historically it's significant, the bill was rather limited compared to what the gun control advocates would have wanted. But at least as a start, for the past 30 years, nothing was done. And just before he signed the bill in June, Joe Biden said that although the measures didn't achieve anything that he had hoped for, the bipartisan piece of legislation would ultimately save lives. And according to Biden, and I quote, "At a time when it seems impossible to get anything done in Washington, we're doing something consequential," end of quote. So, you know, so we'll have the COVID relief plan, we'll have the gun legislation. And next important thing was the CHIPS Act, that building semiconductors at home and in China and Indonesia and wherever else. So the CHIPS and Science Act of 2022 was passed in August, which allocated around $53 billion in federal funding for manufacturing semiconductor chips in the United States instead of relying on China to produce them. So according to the White House, you can go to whitehouse.gov and see the detailed information on the CHIPS Act. The bill will boost American semiconductor research, development, and production, ensuring U.S. leadership in the technology that forms the foundation for everything from automobiles to household appliances to the defense system of the United States. So the cell phones, laptops, gaming consoles, washing machines, automobiles, nearly all modern electrical devices require semiconductors to function. And I know for sure that in New Jersey, in Rio Rancho, and that environment, that, you know, we're building plants to ensure that America have jobs, New Mexicans have jobs, how we build, you know, semiconductors and computer chips and different things, you know, so we don't have to depend so much on China. You know, and through the United States, and though the United States is a major semiconductor manufacturer, we'll produce in 2020 $5 billion worth. It imports more than double what it produces in 2020, you know, and according to the Observatory of Economic Complexity in 2020, that double was $12.5 billion of imports from China. So we'll have a deficit when it comes to import-export with China. We can't allow that to happen. So supply chain issues during the pandemic highlighted the heavy resilience, and Biden's bill aimed to remedy the level of overseas dependence. It passed in the Senate and the House through, you know, major bipartisan efforts. And, of course, the usual players that try to put a muck in it is Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona, now an independent running for re-election, and Joe Manchin in West Virginia. You know, so those two are not really Democrats. They tried everything to embarrass Joe Biden and his administration. But, you know, it always falls flat in the face. They're trying to play kingmakers, but it's just not working out for them. So the Inflation Reduction Act was another thing. And not long after securing his seat in Oval Office, Joe Biden worked to pass the Build Back Better Act. And this is a massive social spending bill in the tune of nearly $2 trillion. It included many promises Biden made on the 2020 campaign trail, such as major healthcare reform, universal pre-kindergarten, prepaid family leave. And it's a shame that the first world country like the United States don't have paid family leave yet. Mm-hmm. You know? Canada has it.
Yep.
Jamaica, from back in the 1970s, had it. So if a third world country, developing country like Jamaica can have it back from the 70s, why can't a big first world country like America have it? You know, that's just appalling, inexcusable.
Yep.
$550 billion was dedicated to combating climate change and more. It paid for in part by increasing taxes for corporations and the uber rich, because as we know, corporations pay little to no taxes. And the uber rich get tax cuts. And what they do with these tax cuts, instead of investing it back in the economy, they put it in offshore banking and these dummy corporations to avoid taxes. You know, we can call the names, but it's too long to list out and everything. You know who the players are. GE is one of the major ones who never pay taxes. You know, so that's appalling. That's disgusting. That's disgraceful. Shame on them. So the original piece of legislation stalled, but after months of negotiations, it resurfaced under a different name, the Inflation Reduction Act, and it was passed. Joe Biden signed it. So it took almost a year for Biden's ambitious package to pass through Congress with Vice President Harris' vote, breaking the Senate 50-50 partisan line vote, and it cleared the House in a 220 to 207 votes on the party lines without a single Republican voting for it. And you know what's disgusting? They're going back now on a campaign trail in 2024, saying that, oh, look at that. You know, look what we did. And none of them voted for it, but yet still are taking credit for it. So, you know, I'm asking America, the people listening now, whether you're independent or sick of Trumpism in the Republican Party, look what Democrats have done with no help from Republicans, and no Republicans want to try to set a debit for something Joe Biden and Democrats work hard on. They did everything to stall it, kill it, did nothing in terms of, you know, allowing it to pass. They didn't even want to debate the thing, but yet still are taking credit now for it. So, you know, the better Republicans, you know, we know it's in you, but because of spite and malice, and you listen to your narcissistic leader, Donald Trump, which should go to prison, by the way. You know, just wisen up, because, you know, this country need more than two parties, but the way the current system is set up, you know, is just a two-party thrive in this system, with the Electoral College and what have you. You know, so when a one-party state, the Republicans are doing their best to make the Republican Party die because of Trumpism. So, you know, we mentioned other things as we go along the show and everything. Season 5, episode 34, In Brightest Day, In Blackest Night, we're talking about successive Joe Biden, Kamala Harris administration. We'd love for you to call us. Don't be shy. Don't be afraid. You can even call in, but if you'd rather not talk, you can listen. And thank you for sharing all over. The number is 515-605-9802. Say first name where you're calling from. All background noises off, because we don't want any distractions. It's hard for people listening when you hear a lot of background, you know, feed, if you have, you know, a television on or something. So, you know, just be considerate and turn it off or turn it down, mute it, whatever. And go to the website, kitchenpolitics123.com. We'll have some exciting blog articles there. And merchandise will be on sale soon. So we're taking our first caller here for tonight. And this is Elaine from Michigan. Hello, Elaine. What's cooking tonight?
Nothing much. Both of you are on the right track. We had very, very good discussion yesterday. I remember something said to me when I was in office, and it was, you have to spoon feed the media. But they are lazy. And that was drilled into me. You have to spoon feed the media. You not only spoon feed the media the good stuff, but you notice that the Republicans spoon feed the media the bad stuff. Now, while we're talking about Joe Biden's accomplishments, mm-hmm. it doesn't hurt to keep reminding people, like Miss Bobbitt. Why isn't she on every TV station for what she's done? I got to see the video. I've watched it a couple times, and every time I watch it, I see a little bit more. That display in that show was absolutely disgusting, and that should be on every TV station. But it won't be unless the Democrats get a PR department. Yeah. They can have other people work on it. There's volunteers out there that will go through the computer and say, well, what about this and what about that? Should we work on this? Should we harp on that? That's where we need to go.
Yeah, but you know, Elaine, I'm pretty sure that Democrats, they have a war room now to answer every lie that Republicans tell. So I'm pretty sure in an upcoming election that they'll run ads in Colorado District 3 where she's running.
Not ads. Take advantage of the free stuff. And Trump didn't take advantage of the free stuff, and he still isn't taking advantage of the free stuff.
Well, but during the mainstream media, because
incriminated himself. But that interview could have been done sometime this week, not on Sunday when the strike broke.
That
is wrong.
Yeah, but okay, but the mainstream media goes where the money is made and thrive off negativity.
The mainstream media will also go where you put the pressure on them. You put the pressure on them, that means you aren't going to be buying their goods. They'll know that you're paying attention.
Okay,
I'm just going to whitewash it.
Their attention is like as big as a gnat, you know? And it's early in the game right now.
And press releases. You have to email them. Now it's the electronic age. And I'm not good on the computer. Damn it, or I would be emailing them. You have to email them 10, not one, 10. 10 emails. 10 emails from Lori, 10 emails from David, 10 emails from John Q. Citizen and Dick Jane and the dog and whatever. 10 emails a piece. After they get 100, they'll say, oh, God, I guess we'll have to do something about it. That is how the Republicans work.
I understand that. Remember, can I make a point? Remember who owns the media. Five families in the United States were very wealthy, and they lean Republican or are outright Republicans. So no matter how much letters you write, not saying it's not going to work or couldn't try, but these people, like CNN is a perfect example where they're neutral. And then all of a sudden, boom, they're trying to go to the right to compete with Fox News, and it's crashing and failing miserably because they're trying to be Fox-lite, basically. You know, so, you know, can write all the letters you want, you can call in and, you know, tell them, hey, you know, we want this. But they won't do it because of who owns the media, you know, and, you know, Republicans and Fox News have a well-oiled machine. And that's where DNC comes in, the Democratic National Committee, to have a war room now. And the White House press agency and press office, you know, to have weekly, daily presidential brief or press briefing. And, you know, they could, like, counterattack what Republicans and Trump are saying. You know, so it's up to the media now to not spin that. And that's why a good organization like C-SPAN is good because, you know, C-SPAN is totally neutral. You know, we need more C-SPANs out there in the mainstream media. You know, that's a solution. You know, and again, bring back the fairness doctrine.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And
you
know, other thing, David, is those, there are a lot of independent media, I don't know if you want to call them companies, but organizations like the Mighty Touch and, well, there's us, you know, Kitchen Politics. There's, you know,
Brian Tyler Cohen, Young Turks.
The Young Turks, exactly. And, you know, and they speak, you know, they speak truth, but they are not on television, of course. They're online. They're on Facebook. Mm-hmm. They're on Instagram. They have their websites just like we do. So it takes a little bit more time, you know, for people to become familiar with them. But they speak facts. They don't soften anything. You know, they're not making millions of dollars. They ask for donations so they can keep going, because there is a difference between the mainstream media and people like us and Midas Touch, like I mentioned, and Young Turks, and the list will go on, because they're the mainstream media is there to make money, holders richer, etc. And, you know, we will never be like that, but we have a different feeling or maybe goal as to what we want to do, because we really care. And, yes, if we can, you know, profit a little bit along the way, that's wonderful. But our main goal is to just try to make some sense of the insanity that is happening in this country. That's, you know, the main goal. And that's why, you know, I do this. And sure, I'd like to sell a T-shirt once in a while, or a mug, or, you know, whatever, when we get everything, you know, situated. Sure. But the thing is that right now I feel like our country is on fire. And, you know, I see President Biden working and his administration working so hard to try to keep the wheels turning in this country so it doesn't fall back. And, you know, it's gaslit every day, gaslit, you know, the Hunter Biden thing, you know, he can't talk, and, you know, he's falling off his bike, and nothing positive. And I'm sick of it. I'm sick.
And so instead of having a policy discussion and debate, you know, Republicans talking about these nonsensical things that, you know, not putting food on the table for Americans, not finding jobs, not training workers, you know, and not outsourcing jobs. That's what Republicans need to talk about, you know, policy making, you know. And, you know, they're just blank. They're just ignorant. And that's why I don't want to get rid of the Department of Education, to keep people ignorant and stupid, to be like decent and, you know, workers, you know, just listen to what they're told and just do what they're told without critical thinking. I think critical thinking was lost when George W. Bush became president. Everything just went down the tubes then. And we're suffering for it now, whitewashing history in schools, you know, the Mothers for Liberty, our Moms for Liberty. Which is originally a Michigan group, has gone spread over the country, and they're you know, promoting all sorts of lies, and they're funded by Betsy DeVos and company. You know, all this has to stop. How is that helping American people? It's not helping one bit. It's just dividing, you know? And what they're putting out there, imagine the crazy Hitler. How can you take a movement like Moms for Liberty when praising Adolf Hitler, one of the biggest mass murders in the 20th century?
You know, a lot of them, David, are not even moms. They're not. They're not moms. They're just there just to cause disruption. They're just there to, you know, say that their kids are being groomed. Really? That's what Lauren Boebert. And look at who's grooming who. Really? Come on. Wake up,
people. Lauren Boebert. She ran, the two times she ran, successfully. The second time, she won by a nose hair, basically. You say, oh, you should preach on family values. But let's break it down a little bit. Family values should be talked about. Talk a good game, but, you know, looking at her 17-year-old son, not like a 15-year-old girl. Now she's a grandmother at 36 years old. Hey, congratulations to her. But, you know, when you're cowtowing people and talking down to them, saying, oh, you know, they'll break heads. To trans show, who are you to tell anybody what to do when you're inside of a public theater watching Beetlejuice, the musical, and puffing on your inhaler, whatever you call that, you're vaping, which is illegal to vape inside a venue like that. You're taking pictures, you're taking videos, which is a no-no in situations like that. You're being loud and obstructive with other people around, a pregnant woman's around, you're blowing vape smoke in her face. you know, mm-hmm. and you and your partner at the same time basically grow up in each other, you know, mm-hmm. and being inappropriate where kids are around, in public, and you call yourselves a family of values, Christian conservative. I mean, the whole thing is so deplorable. There's that word again, deplorable, you know,
yeah.
and I wish that when 2024 come in District 3, Colorado, the people mm-hmm. get fed up enough to vote out, you know, Lauren Boebert, because basically what she did in that theater, watching that play, that musical, is giving us a mm-hmm. sneak preview of our OnlyFans page when she's voted out. She is maniacal. Yeah. She is narcissistic like Trump. And she just mm-hmm. don't have any behavior. You know, she's not. She's like Sarah Palin, but without class. I'm not saying a lot. Sarah Palin don't have much class. Let's just put it that way. But she's below Sarah Palin in terms of the way she acts publicly. You know, at least Sarah Palin, you can catch Sarah Palin acting like that in public. You know, so it's just appalling, you know, and disgraceful that these family values people behave that way. You know, and they want to legislate, you know, behavior and policy mm-hmm. and make laws based off the Holy Bible, their religion, which is nonsense because there's a separation of church and state. You know, it just
for
can't
sure.
get into the heads that there's a separation between church and state and it should never be crossed. But that is why it's important to go out there and elect Democrats in 2024 and put these Republicans in their places and teach them some manners and teach them some respect, to respect mm-hmm. people who elected them in the first place, and not go to corporations and be beholden to corporations. You know, that's not what democracy is about. It's not an oligarchy, you know. And if you want a theocracy, then go to Iran. If you want an oligarchy, go to Russia. You know, politics and religion should not mix. But I digress.
No.
Going back to now this Inflation Reduction Act, the package,
mm-hmm.
it also included $369 billion for climate initiatives to reduce greenhouse emissions and promote lean energy technologies. Already, Germany and Denmark lead the way in that field, in climate initiative to reduce greenhouse emissions, because they're at least 30 light years away from every other country in the world in terms of using alternative energy. Another $300 billion in new revenue through a corporate tax increase. As was said at the top of the show, we're saying almost every show, that corporations for the past 30, maybe 40 years, since Ike Eisenhower days, have not paid any taxes. That's
mm-hmm.
repulsive. You know, $8 billion was set aside for the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, to hire new agents to modernize in technology and to audit the wealthy and to do other things, go after tax cheats. And Republicans fought tooth and nail to stop that. But, you know, Democrats held firm. And because of that deal, it was supposed to be more than $80 billion for IRS, but because people like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona, you know, they played kingmaker and reduced that amount. So, you know, the IRS getting just $80 billion, which is sad. A $2,000 annual cap from out-of-pocket prescription drugs costs for those insured by Medicare. So Joe Biden is fighting to keep the Affordable Care Act, you know, making it stronger, enlisting, enrolling more people, and fighting for the average person in terms of getting proper health care. So another thing is support a Ukraine defense against Russian invasion. If Russia can do that to Ukraine and neighbors, what makes you think China can do that to Taiwan or any other big country to a smaller, lesser, you know, militarized country? You know, that should be... Yeah, no. You know, the United States recently pledged another wave of support for Ukraine and pledged over $44 billion in its 2023 federal spending bill. And when added to what the White House provided early in 2022, it brings America's total contribution to over $100 billion in aid to Ukraine against Russian aggression. So is Ukraine winning? According to our media, yes. And according to some quarters, no. But eventually, within a year, hopefully before that, we'll see some positive changes where we can, Ukraine can push Russia back and eventually out of their territory. And,
you know,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, the other thing we have to remember is, Ukraine was a democracy. You know, they were a thriving democracy. They had a beautiful country, beautiful buildings. Their children went to school. They had, you know, it was a thriving country. And to make, and to not want to keep a country like that a democracy and let it fall into Russia's hands would be tragic. You know, it would be just tragic, because then you'd have another communist country, you know, something that's absolutely backwards, you know, just to put it mildly. So why should
I wouldn't say communist, because Russia is not communist. They're oligarchy. You know, communism died in 1989. You know, the only communist nation are North Korea and China. And it's sort of like a hybrid communist country, China, because they have the laissez-faire system, which is a form of socialism, and they mix it with the communism, called the Communist Party of China. It's the only party there and everything. So, you know, whatever they're doing, it's working.
It is.
You know, of course, those two countries. Yeah, because China is making some serious money. We owe them hundreds of millions of dollars. They're expanding in Africa, in the Caribbean, in Latin America, giving these nations, these developing nations, money to build infrastructure in these countries, especially in the African continent. And it really pissing off America that they're doing that, because China is, you know, like spreading their influence around the world. And not, you know, and these countries who always come to the United States for help in terms of foreign aid or infrastructure aid, America, because of the pressures we have at home, you know, and abroad, because we play world police, faith or not, you know, the, so we're spread thin, you know, and China, that's where China's stepping now. And so America's seen that. So it's like basically an economic proxy war between China and the United States. And now China, with, you know, set up shop economically with BRICS nation, BRICS nations of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And they want more countries in the G20 to join BRICS. You know, so that, you know, they challenge the United States economic power around the world. And in the next 20 to 30 years, we'll see how that plays out. If the United States going to be number one still in terms of, you know, economy, the world economy, you know, based on a country-by-country basis, or will BRICS overtake them, us, as you know, the primary superpower? You know, I mean, a lot of things playing out here. You know, as George Bush Sr. said in 1989 when communism fell, a new world order is in store. And I guess this new world order, fueled by globalism, is like turning everything upside down. So everything after World War II and the Marshall Plan is, you know, past. And these nations coming together to make economic pacts and everything to challenge the supremacy of the United States. Should we be worried? Yes, we should. But at the same time, should our budget be 20 developed nations, you know, when you add up all those nations, our budgets are still bigger than that. We're talking about entire budgets for the defense budget alone. You know, that's crazy. There's no Cold War going on, so why we need so much things in terms of the budget spending in the military? You know, so well, all those things come into... Yes, ma'am. So, yeah, go back to this thing, though, in Ukraine. So it's been 300 days since the Russian president Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine. And since then, Joe Biden and lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have provided continual financial, military, and humanitarian aid to Ukraine. Like I say, over $100 million, or over $100 billion, which appears to have kept Putin's army from steamrolling across Ukraine, despite its superior military capabilities. Just last week, I'm glad to report that Ukraine sank a Russian submarine. The Ukraine president, Vladimir Zelensky, traveled to Washington just before Christmas last year to thank Joe Biden and Congress for continuing support to Ukraine and efforts to, you know, chase Russia out of their territory and off their sacred ground in Ukraine. And, you know, it's not charity we're giving to Ukraine, but we're trying to defend democracy and invest in global security. And to handle, you know, things in a most responsible way. And as far as I see it, Putin and Russia are bullies. And we're not going to allow that to stand. You know, not saying America's all perfect, you know, because we did some bullying ourselves through the years after World War II. But, you know, this is just naked aggression and should be checked, put in check. Go ahead.
I mean, when they were bombing, they didn't care what they bombed or where they bombed. They killed innocent people, children, schools. They didn't care. Russia did not care where they were killing. You know, I mean, that says a lot. So, you know, that's why, you know, I give Zelensky, President Zelensky, so much credit. He is such a strong man. It's almost shocking to me. It truly is. You know, you see him and he loves his country so much. And he deserves to keep that country a democracy and keep it whole. It's going to have to be rebuilt. But I'm sure that they can do that. We just have to get Russia away from somehow. And I think we'll do it. I do think it'll get done. Not with our boots on the ground, of course, because that's something we will not do. But, you know, we have given plenty of military aid and, like you said, the money. And I give kudos to, you know, President Zelensky because he has not wavered. He loves that country. He truly does. That,
yes,
you have to give him credit. Just have to.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's a picture, because if anybody attacked the United States and everything, could you picture Donald Trump as president staying here and, you know, fighting, literally picking up a gun and fighting for the United States? No, he's a coward because his chance, he got a chance to go to Vietnam. He claimed falsely, he lied, let's call it specifically, he lied saying, oh, he had foot spurs, bone spurs. Nothing like that, you know, but he was just a coward and a privileged bitch. Let's call him what he is, a privileged, overprivileged bitch. Gave everything, was handed to him, you know. So he's just all talk and all bark, but no bite. And he doesn't deserve the presidency. And none of these Republicans running deserve the presidency, much less vice presidency, or anything to do with the new administration. Joe Biden is going to steamroll, and we're going to win.
Absolutely, David. I agree. You know, but like I said, we have to try to harp on, not harp, but try to express the account, you know, talk about the accomplishments and express our admiration for the administration because they have not wavered. You know, he gets up every day and, you know, they say, oh, he doesn't want to have any morning meetings. Well, I remember when they talked about Trump, you know, he didn't have any morning meetings. He was watching television all the time. What did he do? I mean, really, you know, I mean, they have just picked every bone on President Biden that they could absolutely pick. And it's just not working, not working. We're not going to allow it to work, you know.
Yes. And next thing that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris is working hard on is racial equity. The promise of our nation is that every American has an equal chance to get ahead, yet persistent systemic racism and barriers to opportunities have denied this promise for so many. So, you know, is America really the land of opportunity with such systemic racism? You know, is there an American dream, or is it just a joke where, you know, American dream existed only in 1920s and 30s for certain people? You know, because, as I said, these systemic racisms and barriers to opportunity last for over centuries, you know. And the Biden agenda is putting equity at the center of the agenda, while the whole government approaches to embed racial justice across federal agencies, policies, and programs. You know, so this is what the right wing call woke, being woke. And we ask them to explain what the hell woke mean, they have no idea. So having compassion and not being racist and not being a douchebag, basically, to your fellow man, that's being woke and that's bad. You know, so, you know, fuck you, Republicans. You're stupid. And your ignorant followers are stupid. And the president will take bold action to advance a comprehensive equity agenda to deliver criminal justice reform. Because why is it that a black person or a brown person will have like 2 grams or 2 ounces of marijuana. And I get something like 10 years and then 3-4 years probation. But a white man with the same amount of drugs will get probation, a slap on the wrist, and like probably 6 months probation. So the disparity in sentencing the justice system is bad. You know, that should be corrected, and Joe Biden's trying to correct it. And not only the criminal justice system, but there's a disparity in healthcare access. And in education, you know, the affirmative action, the Supreme Court trying to get rid of affirmative action, saying it's unconstitutional. And we're fighting these fights again, even though during the 50s and 60s, we fought very hard for things like affirmative action and Roe versus Wade and gay rights. You know, what is this happening? It's like we're going back to the 1920s where only a few privileged, you know, get what they want and everybody to hell with everybody else. You know, that's trying to strengthen the redlining of fair housing. There's a red line with fair housing that's been going on from time immemorial. That should be stopped. That's just blatant racism. As we know, back in the 70s, Donald Trump's father refused to rent out to black people and brown people because of his racism. And there should be strengthening of fair housing. You know, it's long time, it's overdue. Restore federal respect for tribal sovereignty, among other actions, so that everyone across America has the opportunity to fulfill their potential. You know, so they're still trying to shit on tribal nations, the Native Americans, and they've come a long way since the Tears of Broken Trail, where Andrew Jackson basically slaughtered these Native Americans to take their land to expand the United States. You know, so, you know, this at a certain point, good sense have to prevail and we'll stop, you know, terrorizing and bullying people because it's their land, you know. And the racial equity should promote racial equity and try to do everything to make everything equal between men and between women in jobs, like federal jobs. You know, we should really try for equality and equity. People deserve it, no matter what color you are. You know, on the economy, Joe Biden will take bold steps to address the inequalities and inequities in our economy and provide relief for those who are struggling in the COVID-19 pandemic. The president also will work with Congress to pass the American Rescue Plan, which he did, investing in jobs and training for jobs that, you know, they're like, you know, computer stuff, for example. There's a need for constant training to keep up the world because, as I say, and as we say, globalized economy, and there's a competitive market out there in terms of globalism. So, you know, building the economy back from the pandemic and creating millions of jobs already. It's 13 million jobs been created since Joe Biden been president of the United States. There's a minus when in his 4 years when Trump was there. Healthcare, we spoke about that. The Affordable Health Care Act is being expanded. And out-of-pocket is not going to be more than $2,000. And the Republicans and the pharmaceutical companies wanted Americans to, you know, basically they're just digging out the eyeballs of money. That's what these pharmaceutical companies were doing. And Democrats and Joe Biden stood up to them and got major legislation passed. And no, you know, every American, especially older Americans, the elderly, do have to pay over $2,000 for prescription drugs a year. So that's good. So Republicans bitch and complain about that. Go ahead.
And also the insulin, it was capped, if you're on Medicare, for $35. You know, you pay back at $35 for insulin if you have diabetes. I think that should be expanded even farther. There are so many people that have diabetes, so that would be nice if they could negotiate, you know, some pricing for other people that have different insurances so that, you know, they can get their costs down when it comes to, the medication for diabetes, the insulin. So I think that's really important for them to do that. You know, and we can't forget that also the Democrats are pro-union. They are pro-union. And we cannot forget that, because it is the unions are what built this country. The unions are what gave everyone a 40-hour work week. The unions are the ones that have kept safety measures on the job. And there's so many things that have gone on, like for your pay and your health care.
Mm-hmm.
And your job is more protected as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we need unions in this country, and the Democrats are definitely for unions. In Michigan, when we had Governor Snyder, they passed the right to work, which was awful because there were, let's say, an electrician. They were in the union, and then they had someone that was working next to them that was not a union member, and they would get the same, you know, they wouldn't get the same benefits, but when it came to negotiation time, they wanted to make the same amount of money. Well, no, because you're not in the, why should they negotiate for someone that does not want to be in the union, you know? So the union is very important. That's how you get raises, you know, and in contracts and like that. So we can talk a minute about the UAW strike that's going on. It's on day four. I just sent you an article. I don't know if you see it.
About Sean Fain.
Yes. Now, Sean Fain, I am very impressed by this man. I really didn't know much about him. I've seen him here and there, you know, being interviewed here and there, but he has really, really shown some strength, and he has got his union members and workers, you know, he has got them united and fired up, and he is the United Workers President. His name is Sean Fain, and he's been in that office less than 6 months, and already he has launched a series of targeted strikes at factories owned by General Motors, Ford, and Stellantis. The current UAW contract with the domestic car companies expired at midnight. Like I said, it's been 4 days now. And that's when the workers, the plants, walked off the job. The strikes are not a surprise. They've been talking about this for quite a while. It's been a couple months. They've been having down here. And Fain has taken a more militant tone with management than his predecessors going back decades. And I can attain to that, because I can tell just by the way he talks and his mannerisms, he's not playing games. He is for his UAW members. He believes in what he's doing, and he's not going to take garbage from them. And I commend him for that. He said it's the only way to ensure workers get their fair share as car companies continue to enjoy huge profits. The UAW leader has a long history with the automobile industry. Fain often talks about his family members who began working in the car plants in the earliest days in the United Auto Workers Union. One of his grandfathers was hired by Chrysler in 1937. That's the year the UAW officially was recognized. Fain carries around one of his grandfather's old pay stubs in his wallet. That is pretty awesome. My grandparents were part of the millions of families who moved to the Midwest to work for auto companies to seek out a better life. Fain recalled, like my grandfather, pay stub that I carried with me every day. I'm proud to have inherited my grandmother's Bible and her faith. That reference to faith is evident in Fain's rhetoric, around the UAW, its power, and this strike. He explained this week that he finds a lot to relate in biblical stories of using faith to stand up to fear, something he is encouraging his memberships to do now. To faith, Sean Fain is an unlikely UAW president is an extreme understatement. Recognizing that workers needed a voice, he got involved in the union on a local level in Kokomo, Indiana. He's an electrician. He served as an apprenticeship, and he became a job shop chair in the Chrysler Kokomo foundry. And that's among the most demanding jobs in the union, that you're dealing with grievances and issues on the shop floor all the time. In other words, it sounds like he's very, he's very
experienced because he started from the bottom basically and worked his way up. So he knows what an average worker gets from daily.
And he's on a mission. Let's put it that way. He is on a mission. Mm-hmm. So I think that they're going to do okay. You know, they're going to do okay.
Yes. And, you know, he was saying that GM and Chrysler, he felt that union was giving too much and too many concessions to these corporations who already don't pay taxes. So, you know, like you don't pay taxes, what are you doing with money? You're not reinvesting. You're giving CEOs millions of dollars, basically, these three corporations. And the way the workers sacrificed to save the auto industry when Barack Obama was president while Republicans turned their back on them. You know, it's very sleazy what these CEOs and these shareholders trying to do to the workers and everything. The workers deserve a fair shake, and like what Elaine and Eric were saying last night, that, you know, we can do better than this, and we're going to do better than this. And, you know, we should have more strikes across the board for different industries, like, what's the name? The coffee house there. It's slipping out.
Starbucks.
Starbucks, yes, Starbucks is another one. You know, it's just appalling, you know, that these workers work so hard in the fast food industry, for example, Burger King, McDonald's, are getting like just 25 or less in pay on a minimum wage. You know, Alabama don't have a national average minimum wage of 7.25. They pay the workers less. You know, you can find that on the labor board statistics page of the labor department. I mean, you wonder how these people survive, really, getting paid minimum wage or just below minimum wage.
You know?
It's just greed. It's sickening what these corporations try to do to people. Not to mention kids who, in the South, especially in the Bible Belt, they rolled back child labor laws in Arkansas, Kentucky, and West Virginia, you know, in some places in Georgia where, you know, these factories that the school kids, just around 12, 16 or 17, have to work overnight, get little to no pay, and then go to school the next day. You know, is this the 1920s or is it late 1800s? What is happening in America? Why aren't the corporate media reporting on things like this? You know, it's disgusting.
It is, very much so. And you know, the other thing that Ford Motor Company and General Motors are doing right now, and they are basically going to be laying off the workers that are not striking, and that's wrong, you know. They're doing it because it's to put pressure on the ones that are striking. So he went on to UAW President Sean Fain said, "Let's be clear: if the big three decide to lay people off who aren't on strike, let them try to put the squeeze on our members to settle for less," he said. And he had to say that he released the following of the following statement. The UAW president, Sean Fain, released the following statement following reports of the planned layoffs of the non-striking workers at GM and Ford. And he, like I said, he went on to say, let it be clear, if the big three decides to lay people off who aren't on strike, let them try to put the squeeze on our members to settle for less. With their record profits, they don't have to lay off a single employee. In fact, they could double pay every auto worker's pay, not raise the car prices, and still rake in billions of dollars. Their plan will not work. The UAW will make sure any worker laid off by the big three on the latest attack will not go without an income, will organize one day longer than they can, and go the distance to win the economic and social justice at the big three. So he's not taking any garbage with them, and I admire that. We haven't had that in a long time here in Michigan. We have not. And it's very nice to see and hear. It really is. Go ahead,
yes.
David.
And Sean Fain was on CBS Face the Nation this yesterday. And he called out Elon Musk of Tesla, the CEO and longtime member of organized labor. And imagine back in 2008 with the auto bailout, workers gave up benefits to keep the automakers afloat, you know? So workers in companies like Tesla are scraping by to get so the greedy CEO can, you know, build more rocket ships. That's according to the UAW president when he was on Face the Nation. And in a statement outlining their position, Ford Motor Company, General Motors, and Stellantis, collectively known as Big Three, have warned that the union's demands worsen the already existing cost gap with other car companies with non-unionized work. I mean, who cares, man? If you're non-unionized, then that's on you. But these people are unionized. We have rights being part of a union. So just all they're asking for is 36% in raise of pay to go with inflation or try to keep up or beat inflation. You know, when you're making $29 million or more a year, you know, what is 36% on the average worker at a big three? You know, come on now, have a heart, you know. So, Elaine, what's your thoughts on this UAW strike?
I'm worried about the trucks that went in this morning. Were they there to maybe check out machinery or something, or were they full of replacement workers? There hasn't been any real answer. And the term is scabs.
I would not put it past General Motors, Ford, and Stellantis to
There hasn't been an answer for that, and I'm very curious about that. Why all of a sudden did they have massive deliveries before it was light outside? I've had strikes before, and that's how they get replacement workers inside the plant.
And I wouldn't put it past them.
Speaking of scabs, and we have another strike that we should be worried about, and that's the writer's strike. It was Drew Barrymore that I was trying to think of the name yesterday, and Bill Maher both decided that they were going to have their programs anyways. And the pressure was put on them by their fellow entertainers, and they have decided that they aren't going to go through with their programs until after the strike is over.
Is Bill Maher going to continue?
Pardon?
Is Bill Maher going to continue?
No, he claims he's not going to continue. We'll see.
I know
That bothered me this morning to see those trucks go through. And there is no real explanation, but I'm sure, you were just talking about the the one representing the UAW, I'm sure he's thorough and I'm sure he's checking it out.
Oh. He seems like he hasn't missed a trick yet.
But,
that's what it seems like. Seems like to me.
So that's my take on it so far, which I guess we'll just have to sit back and see. But the people have to understand, the workers, since around 2016, they took cuts. They took a standstill. They kept the tier system just to make the big three profitable. And right after the pandemic, they raised the prices, and that didn't have anything to do with a strike. And it's a sin to have the CEOs make $100,000 a week.
Yeah, it's a sin. It is.
Yeah.
It absolutely is.
Jesus Christ, a heartless.
Yeah.
So let's look at what the auto workers are demanding. UAW started a targeted strike on Friday. It's been going on 4 days, as Laura said, and walking out of the three plants in Missouri, Ohio, and Michigan. So the union has suggested that starting small with low will allow most of its members to keep working while preserving room for further escalation. Negotiations between the union and the Big Three restarted over the weekend, and the UAW said it had, quote, reasonable productive discussions with Ford on Saturday. Ford said it was committed to reaching a deal with the union in a statement to Reuters on Saturday, but still the union and automakers appear far apart. UAW is currently asking for a mid-30% wage increase, 36% over the lifespan of a new contract, down from the initial demand, a 40% pay hike, but still far from what auto manufacturers had offered, which is almost 20% at most. What the hell can 20% do in an economy like this that's rebuilding and there's inflation? 20% is shit. How dare they come with 20%? Jesus Christ, these corporations are evil, man. Rapacious.
If you're making $17 an hour and you add 20% to that, that's another $3 and it's not a lot of money. It really isn't. You know,
to begin with, their percentage is not going to be given to them at once. It's going to be spread out slowly for 4 years, and then another contract will be coming up. So I mean, come on! All they're asking for is a rate increase, guesstimating what the cost of living might go up to.
Exactly.
And I have yet to see the cost of living go down.
No, because we did talk about this last night again, because we have greedy corporations that refuse to give the consumer a break. That's it. Their only goal is to make more money so they can buy $500 million yachts. What else can I say? Or they can build rocket ships and go land on the moon somewhere and don't come back. Who cares? You know?
Yeah, go to Mars, Elon Musk. Go to Mars with your penis ship, rocket ship.
Yeah, don't come back. Who cares? You know? It's unforgiving, you know? You have people that go to work every day trying to raise their families, pay your bills, pay their car payment, pay their house payment, maybe get their kids through college or try to help them go to school, you know, and live decent lives, maybe go on a vacation once in a while, and they don't even want to give them, you know, what they gave up when they were crying a few years ago. You know? It's sad. It's sickening.
But ladies, you know what's even sadder? Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you.
I was just going to say, and then the CEOs, you know, we're going to, you know, the Ford CEO basically said, you know, we'll go out of business. We'll go out of business. Bullshit. You won't go out of business. Give me a break. You're not going to go out of business because you have to pay your employees a little bit more money. Sorry, not happening.
They're not in the dire straits that they were in 2016. That's a big difference.
No. They're making record profits. Mm-hmm. Record profits. What? Mm-hmm. Can't you slice the pie a little bit and give a piece away?
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Gabriel. What
are you going to say? You know, added to which, raw story. There is a brilliant piece by Sarah K. Burrish. She wrote this article September 18, 2023. I want people to look it up. It's on Raw Story website. Mm-hmm. Trump to hold small United Auto Workers Union rally after attacking their strike. So again, this orange son of a bitch who have no common sense nor decency, you know, instead of, you know, like, being on the side of the union and on the workers' side, Donald Trump wanted to hold a union event with 500 union workers from the UAW in Detroit. And the event came after Trump attacked the union for the strike. So there are 30,000 workers in the UAW Big Three, and Trump wants to have a 500-person rally, which is about 3.8% of the union workers. So... You know, Donald Trump tried to play at both sides like he did when, remember in Pennsylvania, where the mining, so yes, I brought mining back, and for 4 years he did nothing in bringing mining jobs back, you know, but yes, he made promises to the miners. He's the same thing he's doing with the auto workers, and how dare he blatantly bold-faced lie, you know, which is his thing. You know, and, you know, he attacked the UAW leadership. And,
yes, he did.
You know, saying that they're going down the wrong path with a strike. And Trump told Kristen Welker on that interview, which was, you know, horrible, as Elaine and others were saying yesterday on the show. To quote Trump, the auto workers will not have any jobs, Kristen, because all of these cars are going to be made in China. Electric cars automatically are going to be made in China. That's what he said at Meet the Press yesterday. So Trump's problem is that 97% of the auto workers of the Big Three auto companies voted to authorize a strike. And as far as I know, that, you know, when you're a part of a union, you can do that. You know, it's within your right as an American worker to do that. So, you know, director of the Labor Education Research at Cornell University told the Washington Post in an interview, her name is Kate, I hope I'm saying this last name wrong, right, Bronfenbrenner. She said, quote, they have two different strategies and they both really need the auto workers in these states like Michigan. Biden is taking this very unusual position for president and saying that the company has made enough profits and can afford to give the workers more, whereas Trump is attacking the union and trying to create a specter of fear about the green transition. So, again, you know, Trump is taking Elon Musk's side and trying to screw workers over, typical Republican move, while Joe Biden and Democrats are trying to protect workers and try to change the course of, like, using, depending less on foreign oil and, you know, have, you know, build green energy cars, you know, which makes sense because, as I could say earlier, Denmark and Germany are light years ahead of everybody else in the world in terms of alternate fuel and alternate energy. So we should go with the program because, you know, environmental cars are saving the environment and saving the world.
Yeah.
You know, the greenhouse gases emissions, you know, really totally wrecking everything, you know.
Yeah.
And Trump's claim that electric cars are automatically made in China and ignored Joe Biden's infrastructure package and the Inflation Reduction Act required that for $7,500 tax credit to be applicable to cars must be met requirements for U.S. assembly and materials, you know. So Trump is just trying to speak on both sides of his mouth and trying to appease pro-union people and anti-union people. And how can you have just 300 people show up? You know? That's ridiculous.
And, you know, another thing that he said, you know, like you said, both sides of the mouth. First, he was siding with the auto bosses against the workers. Now he's with whom? And it's ridiculous. You know, he went on to say, on Friday, this happened over the weekend, he went on to say that American manufacturing workers extends his full-throated support to the union right. He said, think again. Instead, Trump framed workers' economic fight against corporate giants Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis as a partisan skirmish, lumping the UAW in with Joe Biden, of course. In a statement delivered last, Trump railed against the UAW leadership, claiming, and I quote, auto workers are getting totally ripped off by crooked Joe Biden and also their horrendous leadership, because these people are allowing our country to do these electric vehicles that very few people want. He even encouraged auto workers to stop paying their union dues. I'm telling you, you shouldn't pay those dues because they're selling you to hell. Don't listen to these union people who get paid a lot of money. They get wined and dined in Washington. They know that electric cars are no good in terms of our workers.
Trump doesn't even drive.
Exactly.
In 2 years, I've been kept at home, and I had to go across town to St. Clair Shores. And I remarked to my husband as we were driving in the car, I said, look at all of the gas stations that have the electric, I don't know what you call them, electric. Electric something. Well, we call them gas pumps. I don't know what you call those electric things. But they all have the electric things for the electric cars. And half of them to three-quarters of them were full. I mean, you know, but again, he's talking to a minority of people who do not think like the different things that you brought out in the show Sunday, the women saying that the schools are bad, the children this, and a lot of them, they don't even have children in school.
Exactly.
All they're doing is repeating what he says.
Yeah.
Or what Bobette says.
Regurgitating, I think, nonsense. Listening to Fox News on right-wing media. Yeah, it's disgusting.
And the other
really
thing, the last thing that he said was, when I am president, I will deliver higher wages for auto workers. I will protect your jobs.
He's now allowed to negotiate. Come on.
What does the UAW do? They protect their jobs. The president is going to go to and protect their jobs personally? He's going to go there? Really? That's so hysterical.
Mr. Trump, the union is the people. The union is not no mysterious God in the sky. It is the people. Mm-hmm. It is the collection of people holding hands, uniting, and deciding what's best for all the workers. And I'll say it again. They have been very kind to to their fellow workers. They resent the fact that somebody is making $10 an hour and they're making more. I don't know what they're making. I'll throw out a figure, 17. They're saying that's wrong. They're doing the same job. They shouldn't be on a different plateau.
Exactly.
As union is the people, it is not no fictitious God in the sky.
No, it is not.
And you know what, we'll remember, though, that when Trump was president, China had a long control the lithium-ion battery market. And now under Biden, when he took over, manufacturing of things like chips and batteries and other items began to grow significantly in the United States. Like I said, on top of the program in New Mexico, in Rio Rancho, there's going to be a chip factory, that build batteries and other significant things in terms of helping the car industry produce more. So we don't have to depend much on China again. So next thing that really bothered me, because we have 35 minutes left in the show, that Kevin McCarthy's brother-in-law got $7.6 million
dollars in government contracts, and this is never discussed. Why? Speaker of the House McCarthy was very specific in levying allegations against Joe Biden, as he announced greenlighting the House impeachment inquiry, and McCarthy assured that James Comey led House Oversight Committee assertion that Joe Biden is the brand that Hunter Biden and the Biden family sold around the world to enrich themselves. Where was Speaker McCarthy and the Republicans when Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump and Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump was making money while their father was in the White House? You know, and the rest of the post it read. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Do you remember all the patents that she got through China?
Mm-hmm.
Like the speed of light. It was like the speed of light, that how fast she got all those those patents for all her shoes or whatever she was, her dress companies. I don't know what she had, but I'm just saying she got all those patents. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And
And,
you know, they have the nerve to talk about that. And then there's Kevin McCarthy, whose brother-in-law, like we just said, got $7.6 million in government contracts that has never come out. Well, here it is. Now, why hasn't that been discussed?
I don't know. I guess myopic vision, really, on the part of Republicans. So according to Trump on his social Truth social network, he wrote, "These lost lives impeached me twice. I won. Yeah, you didn't win shit. Indicted me four times for nothing. Well, 91 different laws that you broke, you know. So that was nothing. So Trump was saying to the Republicans, basically, either impeach the bomb or fade into oblivion. They did it to us. So it's a revenge thing on the part of Donald Trump and the Republicans. You know, Trumpism has taken over the Republican Party like a virus. And McCarthy has no testicular fortitude or no spine. And he seemed reluctant to risk aversion after 9 months of investigating Hunter Biden. You know, nothing came up. So if there was something, the Republicans would have long publicized it, but there's nothing. And Joe Biden and Chairman Comer for the Oversight Committee repeatedly call them a Biden crime family. They produce no evidence. They have been turned up linking the president to any wrongdoing. So they investigated over and over. It's just like Benghazi all over again, you know, and Big Nothing Burger. You know, and instead of focusing on policies and working with Democrats to compromise and get America moving forward, they're throwing all these red herrings out and distracting people where nothing is happening in terms of Joe Biden or his family breaking the law. Why not open an investigation on why Jared Kushner got $2 billion from the Saudis? That's a point of interest. Why somebody who have no knowledge about investing or you know, why do you get $2 billion? Why, you know, what Republicans turn a blind eye to that? You know, that's craziness.
Yep.
You know?
But let's talk a little more about McCarthy, because this really is mind blowing when you really think about it. So the LA story from 2018 begins. A company owned by House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy's in-laws won more than $7 million in a no-bid and other federal contracts at the U.S. military installations and the government properties in California based on a dubious claim of Native Americans' identity by the McCarthy brother-in-law. Reporters Paul Pringle, and Adam Amarek revealed that McCarthy's brother-in-law's company, Vortex Construction, was awarded more than $4 million in minority set-aside contracts for projects at China Lake. They further revealed that McCarthy had been a staunch advocate in Congress for funding and staffing for China Lake, the Navy's largest property, more than 1.1 million acres and spearheaded successful efforts to expand its borders. The ethics watchdogs questioned whether the blossoming of the in-laws' business in McCarthy's political backyard was a coincidence. The article states that both Wages and McCarthy said they had never discussed Vortex's work with each other. Ha, ha, ha. So
yeah, okay.
Exactly. So the Biden's claim that McCarthy cast aspersions on that closed...
Aspersions.
That closed two relative never discussed the business once was conducting, even when the business could be aided by political power held by the other. Most sounds familiar to McCarthy. It's the same claim he made for himself.
Yeah.
It's just mind-blowing. So in other words, his brother-in-law, his family, got these million-dollar contracts, millions of dollars of contracts. He didn't know anything about it, and they never discussed it. And you believe that?
I've got a
bridge to sell you.
Yeah, it's sickening that these Republicans claim to be, you know, for business and everything, but yet still they're ripping off the taxpayer by giving them no bid contract, you know, because of the family. Imagine if a Democrat did that. You know, he'd be in jail. He'd be in front of Congress testifying. You know, look what they tried to do with Hillary Clinton and bring guys in 14 hours straight. You know, and nothing. They could find nothing. And they spend billions of dollars, that nearly $10 billion in investigating Benghazi. Nothing came up. And now with this no big contract, I hope the Democrats win next year, the open investigation, this, in Matt Gaetz, in Marjorie Taylor Greene, in Lauren Boebert. How can these people, you know, serve two terms? They came in broke as hell, but yet still want to come in now in their second term. They're one of the filthiest, richest people in the entire Congress. How is that possible?
Yeah.
You know?
I know.
And again, you need to drop the ball in terms of asking questions like that. Go ahead, Elaine.
I want to ask a question of both of you. I'm sitting here thinking, didn't Joe Biden and McCarthy come to a gentleman's agreement earlier this year, like around February, that when it came to for this budget, that there would be no government shutdown? Didn't Joe Biden compromise something with McCarthy? I'm trying to think back to that time.
Yes, but you know, McCarthy go back on his word. Because basically the Freedom Caucus have him by his testicles, his gonads, and whatever compromise he made with these Freedom Caucus people, he's to their bidding. He has to do what they say, or they get rid of him as Speaker of the House. So
he's already been threatened.
All right, then we have to remind the Republicans that McCarthy made a gentleman's agreement with Joe Biden. So, I mean, how is it that we can respect him and the Republican Party? I mean, their word is no good. Do you get where I'm coming from?
Yeah, the word has never been good. Yeah,
you know,
the word has
isn't it
been
time to put some shame out there again against them? That they deserve.
They have no shame. That's the thing, Elaine. They have no shame.
No, we can repeat it. I know they have no shame, but we can repeat it. Maybe, you know, we don't know what it's going to take to turn somebody around. It could be this issue or some other issue. You know, I know they have no shame, but we're trying to turn people around.
Yeah.
So speaking of having no shame, Ken Paxton was recently, he's Attorney General for the state of Texas. He was acquitted recently. And posting on his Truth Social platform Monday, today, Donald Trump claimed that his sporadic defenses on the social media site for his longtime ally helped sway the course of Paxton impeachment trial. So basically, Trump is taking credit for his acquittal.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts, Lori, and then Elaine?
Oh, he did have a hand in it. He absolutely did have a hand in it. Those 16 senators all acquitted him, and he had a hand in it. Absolutely. So, and that's wrong. So hopefully something
because
can be
well,
done
no,
about
the legislature in Texas is predominantly Republican, so it wouldn't
yes.
go. They wouldn't find him guilty.
Yeah, I know. I know. I understand that. But I'm just saying he did have a hand in that as well. He did. And it's wrong. It's just mind-boggling that this man is still causing havoc everywhere. His hands are everywhere. His tiny little hands are everywhere and into everything.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't leave anything alone. Why does he have to come to Michigan for this auto strike and just bullshit? Why does he have to come?
Mm-hmm.
We don't want him here. We don't want him here.
Yeah.
You know, why put his hands in Texas? He's everywhere. He is like, he's a wannabe oligarch. That's what he is.
Mm-hmm.
A wannabe oligarch.
Yeah. I want to be Putin.
Thinks, yes, and he thinks that he is the almighty, and what he says goes. He's not wrong about anything. He's never made a mistake in his life. He doesn't lie.
Come on.
Enough
yeah, Donald
is
Trump
enough.
Is a disgusting human being, and he'll be in jail pretty soon, hopefully, before the presidential election of 2024. So call in, ladies and gentlemen. We'll have just over 20 minutes left. 515-605-9802 is the number you call. Say first name where you're calling from and no speaking over the host or other guests. Our website is kitchenpolitics123.com for good blog articles. And pretty soon we'll have merchandise on sale. This is Kitchen Politics 123 Radio Show. We're not anti-social, just anti-stupid. Last call for the night. Welcome, caller. Welcome to the show. What's cooking?
Hey, everybody.
Hi,
hey,
Eric,
welcome.
Great, good to be here. Mm-hmm. Is Elaine here, Susie?
Yeah, I'm
yes.
here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Susie here?
No, Susie's not here,
unfortunately.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, good to be here, as always. I just read the article that you sent me, Lori, and you're right.
Mm-hmm.
It does touch on some of what we talked about on the last segment, and I just called in, so I don't know how much of this you already covered, if you covered it, but there is a problem, and there is something to be said about the main reason why a lot of America still isn't recognizing and embracing a lot of the success and the accomplishments of the Biden-Harris administration is because the anti-Biden voices, for some reason, are louder than the pro-Biden voices. And it's like it makes sense, but at the same time, it kind of doesn't make sense. And like you had said, the problem is a lot of the media, too. They're giving too much time and attention to the last guy that was in the White House. And, this is just by far 100%, beyond 100%, not only the worst president who's been in the White House, but also, like, the worst type of candidate to ever run for the presidency, and as far as I know, the history of America. You had plenty of other stupid candidates, but, I mean, some of their campaigns weren't this unorganized and trashy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my whole thing about it is that is one thing that I'm still trying to figure out. How can we overcome that? How can we overcome the fact that, as Elaine had pointed out, that a lot of the right-wing media has more of an oral influence when they speak about what they don't like about Biden or their support to impeach him, and then you have a lot of Americans who just blindly go with it. You know, I just want people to understand this. I don't want anybody to blindly follow Biden and just, you know, for no reason, but I also don't think it makes sense to blindly hate somebody or despise somebody for no reason either. This person right here has done accomplishments that are greater than what a lot of us initially expected. And the economy it's really up and down, and I guess it depends on who you ask individually. It's really not as bad as people are making it out to be. I think there's still room for improvement, but that's what we have to work on is I'm trying to figure out what sources to go to in order to make our voices more heard. And that's the reason why I'm glad that we do this show and that I do my show the way I do it. And of course I post the pro Biden accomplishments in the post. So I'm trying to figure this out as well as you all are.
Yeah. You know, it's the only way to survive in this country is to have some, you know, voices, you know, talking about, we spent almost an hour talking about his accomplishments, you know, President Biden's accomplishments. And, you know, once again, and I feel that it's important to do that. I truly do, you know. And you're right. We do have two medias in this country. And it's not, they're not pro-Biden right now. I'm sorry. You know, they are only talking about the orange monster, and because it gives them means and money. And then there's, you know, people like us and the Midas Touch, and, you know, we talked all about this, and, you know, that are trying their best to get the word out, you know. And so that's all we're trying to do, because I feel we have a democracy to save. I do. And not us personally, because we can't do it alone, but there is a democracy that needs to be saved. It's coming if we don't do something.
Yes.
Now, let me ask
you
guys.
Do you think
this,
there's a... Go ahead, Eric.
I'm sorry. Right quick. Let me ask you all this. Here's one thing that actually popped into my mind recently. And, of course, most of you right here are, you know, I know you've been around long enough to witness, obviously, an array of politics that took place long before these last few election cycles. And one thing I'm curious to know is what was it like? So I guess we could start with Elaine. What was it like in the – when you look at the – I would say between, like, the 70s and 90s, even 80s and 90s. So when you look at Nixon, Ford – I mean, of course, Nixon had to resign because of Watergate. Ford took over. Of course, he pardoned him. When it was Jimmy Carter, when it was Ronald Reagan, when it was Bush Sr., when it was Clinton, what was the media like in terms of the having a leaning towards, I mean, I know you still had the pro-Democrat, pro-Republican type sources, but did it ever exist to where one side had a greater power and influence than the other and affected the way people thought about the president?
I remember that the Republican Party would tell everybody in the party that the media is lazy, and the only way you can get your way, in fact, they had classes on it, the only way you get your way is you have to pressure them. And they always called it the 200 Club, that everybody knows 200 people. So when you start getting 10 people to pressure, that's 10 times 200. Then the media starts listening to you. And that's how they captured their machine to push the media their way. They started this in, I'm trying to think. They started this somewhere in the middle 80s. They started it. And then the religious group got aboard in the late 80s, and they were already schooled on how to do it, so they just picked up the baton and they continued. And then, of course, Reagan came through, and he eliminated the Fairness Doctrine. And when he did that, they said, now we can give our opinions. They were, that there was glory hallelujah when the fairness doctrine was eliminated.
Well, you know what? I guess that makes sense for the most part. And I guess my question about that from a, I guess from a people who understand it from a historical context is when it came to essentially almost every other president, and it's almost, it's kind of fair to say, but at the same time, it's kind of unfair to say, because, I mean, most presidents in the past half century have served, you know, two terms. I mean, you had one-term presidents like Jimmy Carter, Bush Sr. And so I guess what I don't get is when it came to people even like Bush Sr., who was a corporate Republican and who was right-wing for the most part, but not as bad as the last guy that we had, I guess the question comes down to is why did the media decide to, when it was Bush Sr., he lost his reelection bid to Bill Clinton. And so I'm sure Republicans and Fox News and all that were upset about that, but they had to let it go. And then fast forward some few years later, of course, George Bush becomes president by way of the Electoral College. And, of course, he was the worst president up until Trump got to office. Now Trump gets to office. He loses reelection. But the media has for some reason, has this unwritten, unspoken rule that this is where the money's at. Why did they decide that this was the case with Trump? Why do they think they switched up when he got to office?
To begin with, I think the other presidents had a fairness about them. They were willing to, not on a lot of stuff, but on some things, they were willing to sit down and talk to the people. And the religious end of the Republican Party was not entrenched yet. Trump solidified it. Trump took the pudding and put it in a refrigerator, and it became pudding. It became thick, and it became nasty. I acquaint Trump now as a mafia boss. He's got all his soldiers out there working for him.
Well, and then I guess my other question about that before we – I know one of you probably wanted to continue to something else, but my last question in regard to that is this. And, again, nobody may have a specific answer to this because this is the part that kind of scares me is, as we know, the Republican Party really hasn't been good since about the 1950s when Eisenhower was president, because at that time – he and his Republicans actually stood for things that a lot of us stand for today. They actually stood for people having Social Security, having health care, getting a good education, making good money, and essentially living the American dream. And then, of course, a lot of that changed under Nixon because he started reeling in big money into the Republican Party. And then, you know, Nixon and Ford. And then, of course, Reagan and the Bushes kind of made it a little bit worse. And then Trump put the icing on the cake. Trump put the cherry on top. And so my question is to all of you, what do you think this means for the future? I mean, we went from Nixon, Ford, Reagan, Bush, Trump. How much worse could it get? I mean, how bad could a Republican president be in the next 15 to 20 years?
Well, what I noticed was anybody that was trying to fight and save the Republican Party ran out of gas and said, I won't rerun. Look at all of the good people that decided they would not rerun. And that's been within the last couple elections.
Yeah.
I mean, when the Tea Party came in, the Tea Party was disguised as the religious right. There was a lot of people that said, I can't take this. And they just did not rerun. And I think it made it real easy for these crazies to get in.
So David, what do you say about all this? I know where you're coming from, Eric,
and I have sat there and I have tried to figure out. That's the closest I can get to it. There was a lot of people that tried to correct the problem, and they just plain ran out of gas. They couldn't do it anymore. That's the only way I can put it. They just ran out of steam.
Yeah,
it was beyond them. Mm-hmm. Their family and their sanity, they just couldn't take it anymore, so they quit.
So what's your
The thing where it went wrong was when Reagan abolished the Fairness Doctrine. It gave leeway an opportunity for Rupert Murdoch to create Fox News in 1996. And they went after Bill Clinton like nobody's business. But before that, after Eisenhower was JFK, and Fred Cork, the brother of Charles and David Cork, had money coming out of his ears the way he was rich. John Birch Society, you know, was the start of the religious right thing. And then came down in the 1970s when the real malign Jimmy Carter and everything, and put in this crazy person, Ronald Reagan, a movie star, a beeline movie star, nevertheless. And then, you know, it just get progressively worse with every president, Republican president after Reagan. You know, they keep going further right, further right, further right. And then when 1996 came, Fox News was launched and went after Bill Clinton. They couldn't get Bill Clinton on anything but a blowjob from Monica Lewinsky, you know? And the economy was booming. Everything was going great. There was a tech bubble going on, and the bubble didn't burst. Clinton got it lucky. And when he inherited the economy from George Bush Sr., they had record number of unemployment, you know? So when... You know, they say Republicans are fiscally conservative. That's a load of garbage. Because since Herbert Hoover days till now, every hole that America digs is because of Republicans. And who got them out? Democratic presidents. You know? So we need to have this conversation where, you know, we'll call out Republicans for who they are, dumb, ignorant people who don't know about economics. And they're against education, public schooling, and funding public schooling, and rather fund private prisons because they get money from these private prisons and these corporations, and not really representing the people. And from Nixon right down, the Republican Party has never cared for the American people. People get woke and see what's going on, from the religious right to the Tea Party to the Freedom Caucus. All these crazy nut jobs and lunatics who would make Hitler proud and Mussolini blush. You know, we need to get rid of them. You know, they're on the last throes of their power. And by 2045, 2050, it's not going to be a white majority in America again. And what will they do then? You know, we're not going to make them get away with this election in 2024. We're not going to make them win. We're going to fight tooth and nail to the very last closing at a polling station anywhere in America before they vote them out. Enough is enough.
I think these people are committee of about just hear me out for a second. Laurie and Eric and myself were in a Tri-County area. That's three of us. I think we need about 15 people, and we need a great big, just like they do when they're looking for a criminal. We need a great big map out there, and we need to start analyzing what happened in this year and that year, and see if we can start, just like you do when you're looking for somebody that keeps killing and you can't find them. They keep connecting the dots and they keep investigating. I think that's how we're going to find the answer, or at least get close to it.
Yeah, Laurie, we'll have on a 5 minutes. So you have the last word, Laurie. What's your take?
Well, I was just, you know, Eric brought up the news station. So I was just kind of looking up when Fox News started their cable station in 1996. CNN was 1980. ABC News was 1945. NBC was 1940. NBC was 1989. So at that time, I was born at that time, but what I'm saying is I think like NBC and ABC, they were very respected at that time. It was a different, you know, I think the news was very professional, and I think they told more truth than not at that time. And
Walter Cronkite era.
Yes, like Walter Cronkite, and yes, absolutely. And so now I feel like we know what Fox is, but they're almost, they're all clamoring for who could, you know, who could be the most sensationalized, you know, and get that story the fastest, you know, and make us go gasp and go, oh my goodness, oh my God, you know, that.
So it's not really hard news, but more entertainment.
Yeah, So with that, you know, that is why I'm saying we need to, you know, try to look at other avenues as far as getting our information from different sources.
Different sources, and investigate
them, sure that they're telling the truth, and then we speak about it. That's what we have to do.
Yeah. Indeed, indeed. And that has to be the last word. Eric and Elaine, thank you for calling. And thank you for listening and sharing across all social media. The website is kitchenpolitics123.com. And we're here every Sundays and Mondays, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time. And we hope to see you next Sunday and Monday again, people. So until next time, same place. This has been Kitchen Politics 123 for Monday, September 18th, 2023. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico. Good night, Lori.
Good night, David. This is Lori Picka from Michigan. Thank you, Eric and Elaine, for calling in. And we enjoyed doing this show, and we'll see you next time. Bye now.
Have a good night.
There is only one America. No Democratic rivers. No Republican mountains, just this great land and all that's possible on it with a fresh start. Cures we can find, futures we can shape, work to reward, dignity to protect. There is so much we can do if we choose to take on problems and not each other. And choose a president who brings out our best. Joe Biden doesn't need everyone in this country to always agree. Just to agree, we all love this country. And go from there.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Okay, late breaking news in Denver, Colorado, at a bar. Somebody was denied entry, and he just started shooting at the place. Don't know if anybody got killed or injured, but, you know, just getting the news here on Kitchen Politics 123 that there's another mass shooting in Colorado. So see you next time and next week, you know. Again, gun control. All right, Lori, see you next time.
Hey. Good night.
many people have been left behind and treated like they're invisible. Folks, my economic plan is about investing in places and people that have been forgotten. It's about making things here in America again. It's about good jobs. It's about the dignity of work. And it's about the damn time we're doing it.
Joe Biden is determined to reward hard work. That's why he passed historic laws that rebuild our roads and bridges, invest in our factories, and bring back American manufacturing. Over 12 million jobs have been created, and Joe Biden's building an economy that leaves no city, no town, no American behind.
We're investing in places and people that have been forgotten. They've been invisible, but we haven't forgotten. We're building an economy from the bottom up and the middle out, where no one's going to be left behind.
Joe Biden, a president for all Americans.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.